Welcome to Money Radio, WPSE's monthly broadcast of the Rotary Club of Erie meeting program at the Sheraton Erie Bayfront Hotel. Today's speaker is Honey Stempka, Lake Erie Designation Manager with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration.
All right. Good afternoon, everyone. As Karen said, yes, my name is Honey Stempka. It is my real first name. My parents had a great sense of humor. It's made for an interesting life. At some point, I feel like I will either have a stand-up comedy routine or write a book because I have lots and lots of stories about how this name has impacted my life. So for those of you that don't know me, and it looks like there are many of you because I see a whole bunch of unfamiliar faces, which is actually really, I think, very great because this is a whole new audience to kind of introduce this project to. I work with NOAA, which is the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, specifically the Office of National Marine Sanctuaries, and I'm here in Erie. However, I have a history with not only with this project, but a history with the community as well. I've been the director of an environmental nonprofit located across the bay here at the Tom Ridge Environmental Center. I was the director of planning and community development under the Dale Kemper administration for a period of time. And then I worked with the emerging office of community planning with the Department of Community and Economic Development with the Commonwealth. And so I'm here today to talk about a project that 9 years ago kind of came into my life unexpectedly, and I never thought I would kind of continue working on it. So, show of hands, if you're not eating currently, you can just nod if you are. How many of you have visited a national park? Okay, most people in the room. How about a national marine sanctuary? How many of you might have visited a national marine sanctuary? All right, a couple of hands. Yeah, they are all over the country, and I'll get to that in a moment. So, sanctuary sites are like national parks. They're just underwater, right? They're either protecting or sharing the story of something to do with the environment, like corals, or something to do with shipwrecks, which we'll get to here. So, some of you have been to the National Marine Sanctuaries. You can see here, this is a map of all of the sanctuary sites in the country. Right now, there are 16 National Marine Sanctuaries, so a quarter of the sites that the National Park System has. And you can kind of see where they're located across the entire country, as well as the Hawaiian Islands as well. Drilling down a little closer to the Great Lakes, we have now kind of a network across the Great Lakes for sanctuary sites. In the middle there, you'll see Thunder Bay. That actually was designated in 2000, so 24 years ago. That was the first Great Lakes Sanctuary. And that community is very interesting. It's about the 10th the size of Erie. It is about 4 hours north of Detroit. I made that drive in May. And that town has been completely revolutionized because of the National Marine Sanctuary. We've got Wisconsin Shipwreck Coast. They were designated a National Marine Sanctuary in 2021. And most recently, Lake Ontario. Just this July, actually July 22nd, they were officially designated a National Marine Sanctuary. And earlier this month, I was up in Oswego, New York. There are 4 counties that make up that particular sanctuary. And Oswego, New York hosted this community celebration. So the governor of New York did not make it, but a whole host of other dignitaries from across the state and across the NOAA system, communities, right, all came together in Ontario to celebrate that. So we are actually the next Great Lakes Sanctuary that will be designated, and I'm going to talk to you a little bit about that here today. But before I get to that, I want to talk about the resources that National Marine Sanctuaries bring to communities, because they bring a whole host of things to the community besides the fact that eventually there'll be what's considered a national park underneath the water of Lake Erie, our portion of Lake Erie. There are a whole bunch of other things that happen. So there are four things here on this slide and another slide that we'll get to in a moment. So in regards to resource protection, we have an organization, once again, pointing that way to the Tom Ridge Environmental Center, called the Regional Science Consortium. And they're a group of higher ed institutions from across the entire region that do all kind of work around freshwater and obviously Lake Erie. But they also house what's called the Pennsylvania Shipwreck Survey Team. Anyone a diver in here? Anyone? No divers? All right. Well, that group of people here in Erie, well, they're not just Erieites. They come from all over. And I'll get to kind of what the historical assets are on the bottom of the lake that are so interesting. But they go out and they dive on the shipwrecks that we have in the Pennsylvania waters. And they do kind of studies on those, trying to understand what their historical connection are, kind of what is or is not down there, and kind of taking measurements and kind of doing all kind of scientific things to those. So I've just started officially with NOAA about 6 months ago, and in that time, we were able to get a grant to the Regional Science Consortium for about $100,000 over the next 2 years to support the work of PAST and to support the work of the sanctuary to be able to go out and do more work on the submerged historical artifacts in the lake. In addition to that, we've got education and outreach. We actually have someone in our audience today whose school will be the first Ocean Guardian School in Pennsylvania. Erie Day School. So they received a grant from NOAA to go through this year. They're going to be doing a whole project related to the Lake Erie watershed, its impact on Lake Erie, and then, of course, how that connects back to the ocean, all of the work around the environment to be able to kind of make sure that our water is staying clean, and the school is kind of doing all kinds of interesting stuff with the students there. And so they received a little over a $3,000 grant just a short time ago to begin that project, and there will be subsequent years of funding that will follow that to kind of continue to grow the Ocean Guardian School program at Erie Day School, and I'm hoping, I'm in conversation now, to extend that out to our other coastal schools, if you will. So research and monitoring, that's also a really important thing that NOAA brings to the table. We have a fleet of ships that travel around on the Great Lakes to do research, but we also, once again, we are able to bring resources, oftentimes monetary resources, to organizations that are already doing work that kind of partners well with our mission. And so this last summer, and actually many summers, there is what is called a field sciences school that happens out here on the lake, specifically, once again, around our shipwrecks. So there are students that are going to school for archaeology, and they get a practical experience diving and learning how to kind of do the measurements and all kind of the scientific stuff related to that. And we were able actually to provide 2 scholarships to Indigenous students that were participating in that program this last summer. They had their entire field school paid for. It's not a cheap date, and they had the entire thing paid for this last summer. And then finally, community engagement. We're just getting started with that. This is one of the things I do for community engagement, is come and talk to groups like this to kind of inform them that, like, this thing is happening out in the lake and will be a real major part of our community in the future. And so I would say, Tatiana, a special thank you to you for hooking us up with the Wednesday night sail crew, so that the film crew that came into town at the end of July for NOAA to gather footage for a film that they're producing about the Lake Erie National Marine Sanctuary. We were able to get some of the crew out on the sailboat, and it was quite magnificent. That whole week was just amazing, and there were many community partners that just kind of opened doors and allowed us access to things so we could kind of film the best that Erie has to offer. So The last thing is tourism and economic development. That is a huge piece of what accompanies these National Marine Sanctuary sites. Like I said, if you think about them like a national park site, that's kind of exactly what happens. We don't have a site here yet. I don't know if we'll be able to get into that, but these are photos from some of our other sanctuary sites. This is a museum actually up in Alpena, Michigan, a replica of one of the shipwrecks there that's actually now inside. Down on the bottom left is a glass bottom boat. So for those shallow wreck sites, because I'm not a diver either, and I saw none of you were as well, that gives an opportunity for people who don't want to get down into the water to still enjoy the sanctuary sites, to be able to go out and learn about the shipwrecks and the history that accompanies these National Marine Sanctuary sites. So how do we get here? What is this all about? Why Erie, right? It didn't just happen overnight. I mentioned I've been involved with this project for about 9 years. Back in 2014, the NOAA folks, they've been here a lot because they do some other work in the community with some of our other community partners. And they started to notice all of the maritime assets that Erie already has in place, right? I've mentioned the Tom Ridge Environmental Center. We're staring out right behind us, right? Our convention center literally looks like a ship. We have the Erie Maritime Museum, the Bayfront Maritime Center, all of this kind of programming around that, a lot of freshwater research. And they said, hey, County Executive Dahlkemper, NOAA's kind of doing a new thing. Way back when they used to do sanctuary sites, they would kind of like come into a community and say, your place would be a great site for a sanctuary. They switched that up. They now rely on communities to nominate themselves for these sites, and then they go through a whole review process. And so they floated that idea out there, and as you can imagine, right, as a county executive, you've got a lot going on. She was like, that sounds amazing, and went on and kind of did whatever else she needed to do at that time. And then they came back again and said, like, remember that conversation we had, like, back in 2014? Like, we were serious. Like, you really have something special here. We think that you should seriously explore nominating your community for a sanctuary site. And so that happened. And weirdly, at that time, I was kind of doing my own thing. I had my own consulting group. And a friend of mine that worked at the Chamber of Commerce at the time had said, hey, the county executive is looking for somebody to write this application. As you can imagine, working in county government, and I know some of you here might have had that experience, or any type of any organization really, right? To have one more thing added to your plate is just so much. And so it wasn't, she had kind of tapped the Planning and Community Development Department to write this application, and it just kind of wasn't happening in the time that they needed it to happen. And so I ended up coming on board and coordinating that writing with a whole bunch of talented people in this community, as well as beyond. We have a gentleman at Indiana University of Pennsylvania, Dr. Ben Ford, who is a freshwater maritime archaeologist. And thankfully, we had connections to him because I am not an archaeologist. I know nothing about the historical significance of what's on the bottom of that lake, but he sure did, and he helped write that application. I spent a whole summer, along with many other people, once again, talking to groups like this about how this would impact the community and garnering letters of support. And so that was summer and fall of 2015, and on December 31st of 2015, the application went into NOAA. So what was it about? Why us, basically, right? You can kind of see some of the things here. This map, it is terrible. There will be a new one. This is the best we had available at the time when we wrote the application. This shows you in the Pennsylvania waters of Lake Erie, so from Ohio to Canada to New York, all of the vessels that are reported lost. Now, those are the, like, reddish triangles, if you can see that. Like I said, it's not a great map. We're getting a new one. All of the purple circles are the ones that we actually have found. So there are about 164 reported losses just in our portion of Pennsylvania, and we've only found about 33 of those. So there's a whole bunch to be discovered out there and recorded. Now, interestingly, we obviously did not have the time, but if you take into account Ohio, and New York and Canada, there are hundreds upon hundreds of shipwrecks because, as some of you might know, Lake Erie is the shallowest of the Great Lakes. And when weather kicks up out there, for any of you that are boaters, it can really do some damage if you are not prepared for it. So that's that. The idea was, we want to preserve, protect, and kind of know about all of those shipwrecks on the bottom of the lake. But we also want to kind of create a more cohesive maritime campus. I mentioned we've got all these things. Everyone's kind of doing their own thing. There's kind of magic when you can kind of come together collectively to be able to do more in the community. Obviously, there's a whole host of educational opportunities associated with this. And then I will tell you as well, it's not just about the submerged historical resources such as shipwrecks. It's also about the fact that we are connected to the Underground Railroad. That's a significant part of our history. And we also, there is evidence of submerged indigenous sites. For anyone that's up on their lake bed history or just history and geological history in general, there is kind of almost a land bridge between us and Canada that there is evidence that at some point, thousands upon thousands of years ago, people actually lived there. And so there's history to be discovered there. So in addition to that, I will say that many of you might know we were a key shipbuilding port on the Great Lakes from the 1700s through the early 1900s. You know about Perry's Fleet. Of course, right in the bay there, we've got a whole host of shipwrecks as well, but that's a whole other conversation. Prior to the Civil War, we had the largest fleet of steamboats on the Great Lakes as well. And we've got our lighthouses, etc. So we have a whole bunch of like maritime history that makes us very interesting to a whole lot of people. So I mentioned 164 reported lost. We've only identified about 33 of those. There's not been a systematic survey. As many of you know, Harrisburg is our state capital. Harrisburg is a long way from Erie, and sometimes they forget about us up here. And I can say that having worked for state government. And so there's been some survey work done on the lake, but not a systematic survey. And next, hopefully, ideally, spring, we have a team coming to Erie to do some survey work, and I'm hoping to line it up in the spring so that I can connect it once again to some educational opportunities for our school students in the area as well. And none of these shipwrecks here have been evaluated for inclusion on the National Historic Register. However, several of them qualify to be on the register. So there is also, interestingly, a Curtis biplane that is reported lost somewhere in the lake that they've not ever found that is connected to the first international flight. So I think that's kind of fascinating as well. So lots of people ask me, I will tell you that, so what does this mean, right? Are we going to be able to boat? Are we going to be able to fish? And I'm here to tell you yes, right? So the only thing when this happens that will be regulated, I say that in quotes, right, is if you want to go down, you say you want to become a diver and you're like, ooh, a nice shiny thing, right? There's a rum runner out there, right? You want to grab just a bottle of rum for yourself, for your collection. You can't, you shouldn't do it. You're not supposed to do it. So there will be regulations around that. Don't damage the wrecks. Don't alter the wrecks. Don't take anything from the wrecks. And for any of you that like to fish, my son is a huge fisherman. We don't have that kind of boat. He bought his first fishing kayak this summer with his summer job money. But you can't go out and drop your anchor into the wreck and then just kind of drag it along and break up the wreck. We will have one of the resources that will come with this eventually. Our mooring buoys. So we'll put those buoys out there so that one, divers can safely identify where they're at, but two, if you do like to fish and you kind of want to check things out, fish like to hang out on the wrecks, you can just anchor into the mooring buoy instead of dropping down into the wreck. And then it doesn't really apply to us here. This last bullet point applies to the Great Lakes that are much deeper than we are, using tethered underwater ROVs. Ooh, there's my time. You can't really do that without a permit, and we are almost done here. I'll go very quickly, so if there are questions. So what's allowed? Like I said, You fish, you boat, you dive, you want to do research, education, all of those types of things. You can do that. I was actually just yesterday over at the Tom Ridge Environmental Center. The Great Lakes dredging team was here. So all of the Great Lakes states, eight of them, had all kinds of folks that are involved with dredging in their particular lake here. And we were kind of talking about how this impacts their activities, and it doesn't. We exclude typically from our site the shipping lanes and those types of things so as not to interfere. Basically, the bottom line is if it's not regulated, it's allowed, so you can do all those things. And I want to mention something really quick. Did I hear there are people from Edinburgh here, Edinburgh University or Connections, or maybe you're an alum, maybe? Down here, Matt McIntosh, the gentleman who took this is Tatiana, this is one of the photos from the night we were out on the lake. And Matt himself, he is with the NOAA film crew, and he is headquartered in Pittsburgh, and he is an alum of Edinburgh University. So I thought that was kind of really cool that he got to be back up here in Erie and doing this. So basically NOAA was like, hey, awesome, Erie. What you're proposing for your site matches up with what we do when we come into a community to support, right? We provide resources, we help promote you on a national stage, right, to expand education and on research activities, and we help to prevent further damage on those wrecks. And so all that to say that last summer, some of you, Blaine, don't mean to call you out. I think I saw you maybe at that public meeting or something like that. NOAA came to town and started the designation process last year with the first public meeting here at the Hurt Auditorium and basically kicked off the designation process, which is why I'm standing here before you today. And you can kind of see that there. And in addition to that, so, right, there's a public meetings. That's what I honestly love about NOAA, having worked with other federal agencies before on projects. They're great, but they're sometimes just not as public facing as you would like them to be. NOAA really believes in that deeply, really being all about public information, public involvement, if you will. And so not only that, we are co-managing this with our state partners. So the Coastal Zone Management Office with the Department of Environmental Protection, and then the Pennsylvania Historic Museum Commission, their State Historic Preservation Office, are co-managers. Because the state still owns all the lake. NOAA's not coming in. It's not a land grab. We are simply helping to kind of manage what happens to be on the bottom of the lake. And that leads me to my last point here, which is the Sanctuary Advisory Council. I mentioned that NOAA really believes in public engagement and public involvement. And so there is a Sanctuary Advisory Council that is local to the community that is set up to advise and recommend as we go through this process. And we did just close applications on August 28th. However, I will tell you, we will have some spots for some alternates that will still be open because there are 15 seats on the council, and they're for people that have connection to the lake, right? Maybe you're a researcher, maybe you're involved in economic development or tourism or those kinds of things. Those are the types of seats that we have on the advisory council, and we also have some youth seats, which I want to mention that as well. But so that's where we're at now. We actually, after I leave this meeting today, we will internally meet with our team and review those applications and make our first round of recommendations for our first pre-designation Sanctuary Advisory Council, and then it has to go through a forever long process. I always was like, why does this take so long? And now I know, being on the inside, it just takes a long time to kind of go through all of the clearance processes. But before I wrap here, I will mention the Sanctuary Advisory Council does have two spots actually, for youth ages 14 to 17, because as we were setting this up, I felt like it was very important to have youth seats be a part of this because, right, I don't know about you, I'm not getting any younger. Yes, this will be a part of my life for a while, but not for a very long time. And so it was really important that youth have a voice in how this looks for the community moving forward. So if any of you, and I know some of you are, connected with local schools where it would make sense to have me kind of come in and do a pitch about, hey, any 14 to 17 year olds that are interested in being on the Sanctuary Advisory Council, I would be glad to do it. So this is my information. I am glad at any point, once again, if you are also with an organization where you're like, hey, my people might be interested in this, I'm glad to come and do kind of a similar presentation. You know, and as we move along this process, I always get new and interesting information about our shipwrecks and that type of thing that we'll be able to share. But I'll open it to questions now, if there are any. I talked really fast, I apologize. Yes. Oh, yes, repeat the question. Thank you, Clark. So the question is the land bridge. I mentioned indigenous sites on the bottom of the lake and the possibility that those were connected to the land. There's kind of almost a land bridge like thousands of years ago. So that was the question. I'm being asked to explain the land bridge a little bit more. So, I mean, we're talking, I don't know, maybe like 10,000, 20,000 years ago. I mean, way before this area was filled with water, right? There's kind of a bay. I mean, this was all land, but more of an elevated portion of the area where people lived and hunted and kind of lived, you know, did those types of things. But once again, that's not my area of expertise. I'm only hearing this from our people that are knowledgeable about kind of the geology and geography of the lake. I've heard them mention that there's kind of more of an elevated portion of the lake from kind of more like out in the northeast area out to the Canadian portion there, that they believe there is could be some evidence of indigenous peoples. Yes, in the bags, Zach.
Yep. So you mentioned some buoys where the shipwrecks are, maybe research, things like that that need support. I mean, financially, where does all that money come from?
Yep, yeah, absolutely. So financially, a lot of that money does come from NOAA, right? They have a whole kind of research, like I said, boats and buoys and kind of all kinds of other resources. There is the opportunity, and this will all be worked out as we go kind of through this process, for us to support local entities that may have kind of those resources, right? We're not trying to recreate the wheel. So if there's a local entity that, maybe not in regards to the buoys, but in regards to boats and those types of things, that we can help support those entities financially, we would do that. I think maybe the question behind your question, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, would be, what does this cost the community? And at this point, I can't say nothing, right? But these sites aren't created to be a burden on a community, right? And so that's one of the beautiful things about the Sanctuary Advisory Council, is they get to help with the what's called a management plan about what that specifically looks like for a community in regards to education, resources, financial or otherwise, and how that might work in a community. And so every site is a little bit different because you need to make it fit that particular community. Yes, Karen. So the question, thank you. The question was, when the public meetings took place, was there opposition? Of course, there's always opposition, right? I mean, it's life, and it's good, right? I honestly, that's not necessarily a bad thing, because we always look at it as an opportunity to educate people. You know, the biggest concern at that time was that it would impact fishing, right? We have a lot of people on charter fishing boats here in the community that they rely on the lake for their livelihood. And so they had concerns that it would impact them. And so we were once again able to use kind of education, right? Educating them about what this is or is not, to affirm that it would not impact their charter fishing operations. Yes, Clark.
Along that same line, your map shows that Presque Isle Bay, which we're enjoying right here, is also part of the sanctuary. Does that mean that people would not be able to anchor? I mean, a lot of the local fishermen anchor right here in the bay to fishing. Does that mean they could not anchor here in the bay?
So the question is, can local people or anyone really who is using the bay, can they anchor in the bay? So that, as I told you, that map was terrible. In the actual application, when we put in the nomination, we actually excluded the bay. Now, there is a lot of historical shipwrecks in the bay. So I don't know that the whole bay will be excluded in the future. That will be an alternative that we're going to propose. But in my mind, if the bay does end up being included, or a portion of the bay ends up being included, that would be first on my list for mooring buoys, so that people would know where those are. But obviously, you've got to be careful, right? Because we've got the yacht clubs that do the sailboat races, and you don't want to interfere with those activities. You don't want to interfere with jet skis and kind of all those things. So once again, that's why the sanctuary advisory councils, local sanctuary advisory councils, are so important to these processes, so that they can kind of help us navigate and set this up in a way that makes sense for the community. Blaine. Yes, thank you for asking. Yes, so when do we think that we will actually, as a community, receive the final, we are designated as a National Marine Sanctuary? Once again, as I mentioned, I did not think this would take as long as it has. However, according to my timeline, I have a very nice color-coded spreadsheet, and we're looking at about 3 years. So where we're at currently is I have a whole team of folks across NOAA National Marine Sanctuaries that have all different kinds of areas of expertise, and we are starting to write what is called the draft environmental impact statement. So how does this impact the local community, not just from the actual environment, but kind of economic development, education, those types of things. So we're starting that process. And then concurrently, the environmental impact statement gets written, but at the same time, you're also drafting that management plan that I mentioned. And so that will be happening later this year or early next year. So that's kind of the first piece of that. And the Sanctuary Advisory Council that I mentioned, we're just starting that internal review. I ideally would love to see them have their first meeting, unfortunately, end of February, beginning of March. Not a great time to bring people to Erie. However, it's what we have to do. But yeah, so it will probably be, I would say, 2027, realistically, sometime in the spring or I should say summer or fall of 27. So stay tuned. Yes.
You had mentioned that you're going to be starting this in the schools, and I just wanted to know, you mentioned Erie Day School, so what does that look like?
Yeah, so NOAA has what's called an Ocean Guardian School program that partners with National Marine Sanctuary sites to have schools do projects related to the environment. And so I was approached about this. So I just came on board, as I mentioned. It's been literally six months today since I've come on board in this particular role. And so that was March. And in May, someone said, hey, do you know about this Ocean Guardian School program? And I was like, no, tell me more. And so they shared it with me, and the application was due in 30 days. And full disclosure, one of my sons just graduated from Erie Day School and is at Collegiate Academy, and my other son is in third grade at Erie Day School. And so, right, oftentimes you go because you got a quick turnaround, and I approached the school and said, hey, there's a grants opportunity. I don't know if you're interested, but I'm going to give you the information, and if you're interested, I'll help you, navigate this process. And so that's what we did. And they're going to do a year-long project related to the watershed and environmental stewardship, right? And there are different kind of slivers of that depending on the school. My vision, because when I, years ago, in 2018, I was the executive director of Environment Erie, and we worked a lot with the schools all throughout the county on environmental stewardship. And I would love to see other schools get involved in this. I just have to see how big the pot of money is to be able to do that. But I would love to open it up to other schools throughout the county to be able to do these types of projects too, because it all impacts the lake, for sure. Well, I probably have gone way over time. I appreciate it very much that you all showed up today, and I am glad to answer questions outside of here. you're welcome to email me, give me a call, stop me, whatever. So thank you all very, very much.
Thanks for listening to Money Radio, WPSE's monthly broadcast of the Rotary Club of Erie meeting program at the Sheraton Erie Bayfront Hotel. You can replay this episode or access other archived shows by visiting the Podcasts tab on our homepage.